Hey, everyone. So, welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a podcast by two dry millennials learning to live their most authentic lives after booze. This week, we are welcoming a very special guest, Meg Fee at You Don't Have to Drink. Meg is someone that I would say is super encouraging in the alcohol-free, sober, curious space on Instagram and is just honestly right now kind of on a roll, dropping some truth bombs over there. And I cannot wait for this conversation. Meg, what are your pronouns? And just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you guys so much. I'm so excited to be here and meet you both. Pronouns are she, her, and I already forgot the other question. So
how long have you been alcohol free? And then just tell us a little bit about who you are, whatever you feel like is relevant for the audience and feels true for you.
Yeah. So I have been working on quitting drinking for a little over 3 years. I would say my sober curiosity or sober journey started in February 2020. And it's funny because recently I was going back in my personal Instagram page and I found all of these posts that I had saved from the winter of 2020. And I didn't even remember like being sober curious at that stage. So it's funny how like things kind of, you kind of can look back on the whole experience and be like, oh, I actually started then. So I like to say, I like to start with that. You know, I started this whole thing. That's kind of when my curiosity started. And so since then I've had, you know, stints of a few months and then I'd slip. And then in 2021, I went almost a full year without drinking up until my bachelorette party in January 2022 when I slipped. And then there's, you know, there's a whole journey in between then. But right now, let me see my counter. I have 204 days alcohol free.
Exciting. I love that.
Yeah. I try to, I always like to kind of include that backstory because I feel like the numbers, the day counts, like they don't really tell the full picture. So
yeah, I can definitely relate to it, the journey starting a lot longer than what like your current tracker might reflect. So
yeah, I think that's the case for most people, right? Like most people stop and start a dozen times, slip a few times. And I mean, kind of like you said, Katie, I like to focus on that a lot on my page. I like to focus on slipping a lot, slipping and getting back up. And because I feel like it can be so discouraging if somebody is in that cycle of, you know, racking up a couple of weeks and then they slip and then a couple of weeks again and then they slip. So I also feel like it helps other people see, you know, see themselves in that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I want to just say, because I think it's important, and we've talked about this a lot on the pod, but having a slip is not the an erasure of your like experience when abstain from of how do I want to say this? It's not an erasure of what you learned when you were abstaining.
Yeah.
Right. Like you still get to take that with you into the next round of alcohol free days. And I think that that's really important for people to hear, because I know, like you said, it can be discouraging. Kaylee, how long did you have when you experienced your like first like major stint and then slip and then you restarted?
I think I did like 60 days.
Yeah.
And then it was a wedding and then 90 days and then it was a bachelorette party as well. So.
Oh yeah. Those will get you.
Yeah.
Wait, was it my it wasn't my bachelorette party, was it?
It was.
Oh my god.
Oh, no.
But it was no pressure from like anyone. It was a conscious decision I made. I felt really good about it. Like I still like no regrets.
But that was so fun.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that I like broke my ankle at my bachelorette party because a winery and then jumping on a trampoline.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
No good.
Nightmare.
No good. Yeah. Okay, cool. So Meg, let's just get into it. Where did your relationship with alcohol start? What was the alcohol culture like in your home, if you're comfortable sharing that? Just where did it begin for you?
That's a good question. As long as I can remember, I'd been familiar with alcohol, like as a child. And just, I guess, as a disclaimer before I say anything else, like, I love my family. They're very supportive. They're amazing people. I always have to like say that up front. But
yeah, same.
My family, honestly, on both sides, like, I grew up with, I grew up around a lot of drinkers. And it was never, like, I don't have any negative, like, traumatic experiences that I'm, you know, that I think of when that comes to mind. To be honest, everything is really, like, happy, like, very joyous. Aww. Like, I had it, like, on my dad's side, it's, like, a big Irish-American family, and everybody's really close, and, you know, so many aunts and uncles and cousins, and I just have so many memories from when I was a kid of just my whole family kind of, like, all partying together, and St. Patrick's Day was always like a huge occasion in my family on both sides. So I was always around alcohol. And it's always funny when I hear, like, sometimes I'll hear people say, like, oh, I, you know, my parents didn't drink in the house. Like, the first exposure was like college or, you know, experimenting in high school. And it just wasn't that for me. I was around alcohol a lot. So, and I didn't start thinking about that until recently. I started with a new therapist a few months ago, and I'm like,
that'll do it.
Yeah. And so I guess I just thought it was like, you know, normal. Like, that's just what you do when you're an adult. You just, you know, you drink and you party and it's all good. But my first time trying alcohol that I can remember was me and my cousin, who we're still very close today. We're about the same age, only like several months apart. She was kind of there for like every single milestone of, like, you know, coming of age. Like, it was like my first beer, my first joint, my first kiss. Like, she's always involved. But she and I remember, like, taking, it was a family party, and we were at her parents' house. And I remember us, I want to say we were probably like 14, like around that age. And I remember us taking like Bud Lights from like the adult. I know, it's like, really, that's what I go for. But I remember us taking Bud Lights, and we went and we drank them. We like took them upstairs and we drank them in her closet. She had like a big walk-in closet as a kid. And I just remember like drinking the Bud Lights in the closet.
Yeah.
So it's funny. Like, I don't remember like what happened after we drank them. I don't really remember anything else except just taking them and, like, you know, being all like nervous and
secretive.
Yeah, secretive.
Yeah.
So that was my first time that I recall. And then, you know, just like a lot of people experiment with it in high school around that age. That's, I know that's pretty common. Then in high school, when I was, I want to say like 10th or 11th grade, I was put on Accutane. I don't know if you guys know like what Accutane. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had like really bad cystic acne and was put on Accutane. And I sort of remember the doctor like maybe saying something about alcohol, but not, I don't, it wasn't something that stuck out, like, yeah, sticks out really. So who knows? I guess, you know, in hindsight, it's really bad to consume alcohol while on that medication. That's like a serious medication. That was when I was starting to experiment more and more with alcohol. Like, it was definitely a junior year now that I'm like recounting it, but I was starting to kind of like go to parties, and I was never like, I was very kind of goody two shoes, I would say, like through like the beginning of all of high school. So I was not one to like go to many parties, but the few that I did go to in junior and senior year, I blacked out like hard. Like, I,
right,
thinking back, I'm like, the flag, like the red flags were flying, like they were there. But as a kid, I remember, and mom, if you're listening, I'm not blaming you, but I remember my mom and my aunts talking about themselves blacking out, like when I was a kid. Yeah. So I think a part of me kind of thought that was also kind of just par for the course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, like, it is normal when you drink an amount that your body can physically not handle.
True.
Right. Like, that happens to everyone, regardless of whether there's markers or not. I think that's like newer science people are talking about. Like, just because you black out doesn't mean that you are more susceptible. You are just drinking to a point of whatever the scientific term is for that. Oblivion is what I call it. But
well, and I think that it is normalized as part of the experience when you start drinking, that you, when you first start, you don't know your limits. So you're really just like experimenting.
Yep.
I don't know. I feel like sometimes that can be an interesting little blanket to put over it, because it's like, yeah, go for it, Kitty.
Well, what I was going to say with that is like, you know, we're like, well, we don't really know how much we're supposed to be drinking, so we're experimenting. But there's actually like serving sizes on everything that we were consuming at that age. It's just that it's like not responsibly educated.
Yeah.
Around.
Oh, yeah. And it was like, what'll happen if I keep going? Yeah. You know? Like,
yeah. And we were drinking. One of my memories is like from high school, we were at like a football party. Like it was like a cool party to go to. And we were drinking Svedka like out of the bottle and chasing it with orange juice. Ugh. And we were calling it the Breakfast Club because it was like orange juice. And I'm like horrified, like thinking back to that. And one of those parties, I remember waking up behind whoever's house it was. I don't even know, somebody I graduated high school with, whoever's house it was at in their backyard. I remember waking up behind their shed, like coming to, and I was like on the ground behind their shed, and like, you know, a friend had to drive me home, like a, you know,
yeah,
it was just not good from the start. So probably back then is when I should have been like, hold on.
Yeah, it's hard. We don't have the ability to do that. There's the three I's, and I can't ever remember what they all are, but it's like invincible. Another one is like impregnable, like where you like your brain is not fully developed. And so you don't realize there are consequences for your actions at that point in time.
Yeah.
So it can be really, really hard. It's funny when you say that, it reminds me of that meme that's like something like when you say you're staying the night at a friend's in high school, but really you're like waking up like dying in a field of alcohol poisoning after a party. And it's like so real, too real.
Yes.
Hate that.
I mean, my mom even picked me up the next day. Of course, I stayed at a friend's house this particular time, and she picked me up, and I remember her pulling over because I had to like throw up outside the car, but I was so like good, quote unquote. Like I was such a good kid that she didn't expect that. She didn't even suspect that it was alcohol related. She just thought I was sick. Like was sick, because we didn't have a conversation about it. And I think I recently brought it up to her and she was like, I don't even remember that. Like it just, you know, she just didn't think. You can hide it so well as a kid too. So
totally
scary.
So okay, so that like gives us a good description. And I feel like that really is, like you said, like par for the course, like really similar to a lot of other people's experiences.
Yeah.
What do you feel like was the evolution of alcohol and your relationship with self as you started to get older and alcohol became more prevalent in your life? What was that like?
Yeah, I guess just like thinking chronologically, then I went to college and again, pretty standard, like I went to the University of Arizona, pretty big party school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been to that campus.
Yeah. and just, I was in Greek life, like I was doing it, doing the whole thing, and still not really thinking, you know, as when it comes to like the relationship with myself, and like, I wasn't thinking about it deeply at that point at all.
No, none of us were, I don't think, at that point yet.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
No, definitely not. It was, again, it was just like what everybody did. The only time that I thought twice about drinking while in college was because that's kind of when my disordered eating tendencies started to bubble up. And so if I was restricting my alcohol intake, it was only to restrict like calories. So that's kind of where the lines get blurred a little bit between like the eating and drinking for me. And then it wasn't until I was in my 20s and living in Manhattan, you know, graduated college, moved back to New York, and started working in advertising, a creative agency, like immediately started working. And the environment at that specific company was very like drinking heavy. Like we had a Thirsty Thursday in the office every week. And there was a full bar in the office. Like I'm talking like a full, like a restaurant type of looking bar. And even when it wasn't Thirsty Thursdays, people would, you know, we would grab a drink every once in a while from there, like while at the office, you know, if it was like an appropriate time.
What even is that when you're working?
Exactly.
Anytime after 3 p.m.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And everybody working there was like young too. Like it was, there were a lot of us who were like the same age, just starting out. Like, and it was a great experience. Like I have like positive memories of it, but that's when I started going out a lot in the city and probably in my, you know, around 23, 24 started just every time I would drink, like something really bad would happen. Like, I mean, I could tell a million different stories, but just blackout after blackout, I always felt like this, I guess it's progressive, right? So it started out different than it ended. And early on, there was like a little bit of like anxiety or guilt when I would wake up, because I was like, whatever it was, like maybe I did or said something out of alignment with who I am, or I would even like lie and make shit up, like make up stories, like who even know, like I would be saying things that made no sense.
Yes.
And so it was just mortifying, like it got embarrassing. And I would say around 2016, just because that year sticks out for many reasons, but I would say around then is when my drinking started to get, like I was drinking alone more. I was drinking like a full bottle of wine if I would come home from work. And at that time too, there was a point in time where I went to the doctor because I was having I've always been sort of an anxious person, but it started to become like a little bit crippling around that time. And I thought it was due to work, but you know, in retrospect, I wonder if I wasn't drinking my head off all the time, like maybe I wouldn't have been that stressed out about work, but I was so stressed with work and it was a very demanding job. Like there were nights where I was frequently where I was working at the office until like 10, 9, even 11 p.m. sometimes, you know, having dinner in the office. Like it's the creative world, like the creative agency world is like pretty cutthroat. And honestly, depending where you are, like pretty toxic too. So really stressful job, definitely abusing alcohol at that point, but it wasn't even in my realm of thinking to stop. Like it just wasn't a choice. So I went to the doctor for my anxiety. The doctor immediately prescribed me Xanax and Lexapro. Like immediately.
Wow. That's a duo.
Yeah. Yeah. She gave me both. So it was like Lexapro every day and then the Xanax for when, you know, when I'm like having a panic attack or whatever. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Like anyone's just taking the Xanax.
Yes. And I remember there being one night where I took the Xanax after work and was drinking wine. And I woke up being like, like that ain't right. Like something is not right here. And I stopped taking the Xanax. And I remember telling my mom, me and my mom are really close. And I remember just being like, I don't want to take this. Like, and it's so crazy to me to think that I was like, I need to stop taking this. Like, this is scary and I might be abusing this, but not even question the alcohol at all. Like, it was not an option to stop drinking. So that was probably around 2016. And it sort of went downhill from there. Like, I had two episodes where I ended up in the hospital from my drinking. You know, woke up in the hospital with zero recollection of how I got there. One of them, like I got an ambulance bill in the mail and I didn't know that I was in an ambulance.
Oh,
yeah, it was terrifying.
That's so scary.
That's super scary.
I'm sorry that happened.
So I guess, I don't know. And then like, it's kind of blurry because even after that, I didn't stop. Like it still wasn't an option for me to stop drinking.
At that point, were you like, I'm not going to drink tomorrow? Like when you would have those moments, like, because this is what, 2016 to 2020 probably. So were you like getting to a point where you're like, you know, looked at your partner or friends or whoever and were like, I can't keep doing this. And then like you would get a couple days under your belt and then go back to drinking? Or at this point, were you not even like having that conversation?
There were definitely like there was like morning after morning after morning where I'd wake up and say, I'm never drinking again. But I don't think I was actually taking that seriously at all.
Same. Yeah, I totally know what that time period is like. And that time period is necessary to get to the next step.
Yeah,
I feel like. So for anyone listening that's in that spot where you're like, I keep saying like never again, and then you just do it the same night, like that will be a part of the process, I feel like.
Yes. And I also recall a few conversations with my very close friends. Like two of my closest friends are actually more than that, are a lot of my close friends still are my high school friends, or even like I met them in middle school.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And I remember having conversations with one of them and being like, am I an alcoholic? Like, do you think that I'm an alcoholic? And of course it was like, no, like, what are you talking about? Like,
no way.
Like, stop. You're fine. Like, you're fine. But I think that the hangovers got so scary.
Yeah.
And the blackouts just got worse. And the situations that I was putting myself in when I was drinking were situations that I would have never like found myself in otherwise. I think a lot of people can relate to that, even with just like you like hook up with a guy that you're like, what? Like you would have never, like that's a common one.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I met my now husband around in 2016. Okay. So I think around the time it started getting scarier is when I met him, and he was a great influence, but definitely the first few years that we were dating and not yet living together, like we were in that early relationship stage where all you do is go out and have drinks. Like you go out, you drink.
Totally.
And so I think I was sort of like, you know, I stopped partying, like I stopped going out with friends and like out with coworkers and stopped going out all hours of the night. And this is when I'm like late 20s, but I was still drinking a lot. Like I was still drinking just as much and using any right. excuse to like get a bottle of wine. And I think dating my now husband, he has a very, you know, as healthy as a relationship as you can have with alcohol. Like he can take it or leave it. Like he's what people would call like a normie. Like, and he kind of, at first it was like, ugh, you're like a buzzkill. You're like, come on, like let's drink more. And like, I was always the one kind of encouraging us to drink. And I started noticing that.
Totally.
And then we moved in together and we had our own apartment in the city and it just got worse. Like I would drink, like I was working from home, for instance, in 2019 and 2018 too, but 2019, I was working from home, like before the pandemic, I was working from home 3 days a week. And my boyfriend, then fiance, at the time, he was going into work every day, just like normal, you know? And I would like start drinking before he got home, like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, like I would get a bottle of wine and be like, oh, I'm just like, you know, finishing up work and like, I'm going to get a bottle of wine. And then like by the time he was home, I already finished a bottle of wine and then like started lying about it. Like it just got worse and worse and worse as time went on. And so COVID was a huge turning point, like us being alone together, stuck in this teeny tiny little apartment. Like I couldn't hide anything from him at that point. So it came to a head at some point, and there was definitely a turning point where he like called my friends and was like, I don't, you know, I'm gonna have to talk to her family, like if this keeps happening, or like.
Oh wow. Okay, so is that like what you would say is like part of the catalyst for change with your relationship with alcohol? Was your now husband, was he a part of that? That's not something that I experienced, and so it's interesting to hear about that. We would love to.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he definitely was. He was a big impact. I think I would have come to it myself eventually.
Yeah.
But yes, he was the one who sort of was like, this is not good. You know, and at that point, there was a point where my hangovers were so dark, like the low was so low where like thoughts even started like veering on like suicidal a few times. Like there's a few instances that stick out and where I like really scared him. And so yeah, I think I would have come to it on my own, but he was definitely part of me. And I wanted to be, this is the thing, is like, I wanted to be better, like for a while, like 2018, 2019, I would even say maybe even 2017. Like I wanted so badly to be able to drink like a normal person, whatever the hell that means.
Yeah.
so badly and I was mm-hmm. trying so hard and I hated when I got, like, I hated myself when I got to the point of blacking out. I hated myself when I was like in those hangovers. So I guess I just felt like it was important to say, like, it wasn't like those few years I was just like ignoring like all the red flags. Like, I was fully aware, but it was almost like two parts of me. Like, there were two of me. Like, there was one that's like, yeah, light your life on fire. And then there was another one that's like, this is not you.
Yeah.
Then it felt like a double life because mm-hmm. I think, you know, my family, very, very close with my family, they always knew that I would get too drunk. They knew I would black out. Like, I had a specific like stare that I would like, a face that I would give my, you know, when I was like gone, my eyes were just like, no mm-hmm. one's home. And yeah, I would get like, you know, people would like kind of joke about it. Like, that's, my family uses humor a lot to like, you know, self-deprecation humor. That's like kind of where I get it
totally.
From. But
right.
It was kind of like, oh God, like Megan gave us the stare last night, or like, oh God, like she has this, you know, or like, don't get that way tonight. Like, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it became like a double life because I don't think they realized, maybe even don't still to this day, like realize to the extent, like how much I was drinking and how much I was like right. struggling.
Yeah. And like the shame mm-hmm. that you were feeling
yes.
on the other side of it. I think it's so, such a good thing. I've never heard someone say it out loud, that like the double life analogy, because I can relate so much with that, like being a mom and being a partner and a professional and having this unhealthy relationship with alcohol that I'm keeping a secret
yes.
from people. And my friends too, like Kaylee will know, our group, like I was like the puke and rallier. I was, you know, always blacking out. I was always like sneaking shots instead of going to the bathroom, like same kind of scenario, mm-hmm. you know. And then I think that like a huge part of being sober curious and like all of that is those two lives coming together and like knowing your shame and naming it and outing it and making decisions to choose, you know, your whole self and not just living in this double life. So
yes. And that's such a great mm-hmm. point, because I meant to say this before, is like, I can't blame anybody for not realizing, like, I don't blame anybody for not realizing, because I hid that so well. Like,
totally.
Sometimes I think back and I'm like, the amount of energy that I put into hiding my shit, like I got
yeah.
like,
yeah, we get really
good,
so at, good it.
At it. But like, I say, like from the outside in, like I had my shit together. Mm. I had a great job, like got promotions, got raises, like in all of those, like, you know, stereotypical, like,
the check boxes. Yes. Yeah.
It was like check, 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 check all the way down, whatever list that is. And so I'm like, yeah, of course they didn't realize, because I was like doing everything I could to make sure they didn't.
Yeah. And it's just mm-hmm. a testament to how like alcoholism, or however you identify, right? Like, it doesn't discriminate. It's like, it affects everyone. And it's just our ability, first of all, like our social class allows us to hide it better than others. But
yeah,
what a wild ride. I can totally relate to that. And I feel like with Kaylee, I don't know, Meg, you may not know this, but Kaylee also works in advertising.
Oh, nice.
So that's what she does.
Oh, I did not know that. Cool. So are you on the creative side too?
I'm a producer. So that's what they call it here. But it's like a project manager and an account manager kind of blended into one.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. I was in account management. So,
oh, cool.
It's kind of funny because they say, you know, like account management is definitely like you're wearing all different hats. You're wearing a project manager hat. You're wearing a producer
yes,
hat. Like
yeah.
you're wearing all the hats. So
all you're doing
things.
All the jobs. Yeah.
yeah.
totally. Yeah. I want to, Meg, you mentioned it a little bit when we were talking about kind of college and stuff, but I know that one of the focuses on your social media is disordered eating and how that kind of goes hand in hand with alcohol. And I was relating to a lot of what you were sharing there, and just wanted to kind of hear like how that also, if you're comfortable sharing, like wove into your story in like 2016 and beyond.
Yeah. I'm totally comfortable talking about it. I would say, and it's hard. I was on Maddie's podcast, Happy Sober, recently, and I listened to it back and I was like, wow, I really struggle to talk about these, like, cause I'm still unraveling it. Like, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, it's so fair.
But it was totally intertwined, like 100%. And it started in college. Like, I would say my first, like, memory of my eating disorder kind of starting was in college. It was after my freshman year. I gained a little bit of weight, as many college freshmen do. It's just, you know, it was fine. It was fine. And I, you know, kind of spiraled that summer, like when I went back home, and I was doing everything that I could to like lose that weight and just like really restricting myself. I worked at a dollar store in my hometown. And
I love that. Yeah,
and I would only allow myself to have a huge ass Dunkin' Donuts iced tea, like with like maybe a packet of sugar, the entire time I was working, which was like 8 hours.
Wow.
And then I would go home. I would like walk home. So it was like right up the block from my dad's. I would walk home and I would swim laps in his pool that summer to try and like, you know, on no food. And then I would eat dinner and that was it. And that's kind of like where I can first identify how it's where my awareness of, because before that, like, what even was a calorie? Like, I didn't even think about that stuff in high school or even freshman year of college. Like, and so that was the first time. And I'm kind of like a pretty type A, like all or nothing person. And so, you know, I went all in on it. Like, I was like, I'm going to lose this. I'm going to do this. So it kind of started out like harmless. And then when I went back to school, I was getting all this kind of like validation and reassurance. Everybody was like, you look so good. Like, I remember it so well. Like, people just being like, girls in my sorority being like, oh my God, like, you look so great. And this other girl who had also lost a ton of weight that summer. And we were both getting like that attention. And then it just kind of like took off from there and it became just like full starvation mode, like counting, like obsessively counting calories, only allowing myself to have like, I don't even want to like say, but like just like nothing, like less than like a toddler should eat in a day. And I was staying up at all hours of the night scrolling Tumblrs, like Thinspiration, like eating disorder world.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody like...
If that corner of the world could disappear,
oh,
I would be so much happier. I didn't experience it, but not... You're like the fifth person now, Meg, that I've talked to about this. Kaylee being another one. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I definitely like used the internet at home alone, scrolling through all of these, like, you know, it's like you're vision boarding, but you're doing it in a way that's like unknowingly like harmful or toxic.
Oh, my God.
It, at least for me, like wasn't sinking through at the time. I was just like, yeah, this is it. This is the dream right here. The thigh gap.
Whatever. Yes, that was it. It was That's another thing that only recently came back to me, like in therapy. Like, I was like, holy crap. Like, I totally forgot that I was completely addicted to this like toxic content on Tumblr. And I, it's funny, I'm actually connected still to two women who we were like following each other on Tumblr for our, like, I would type in my meals every day. And it was like, you know, it would make you would make yourself feel bad for like, somebody else would have like only this today and I would have that. And then you would post your photo of your body and like, look at people's bodies. And it was just gross. Like, I don't even know. And so I was very engulfed in that. But I did know, like, I was fully aware that I was engaging in like anorexia internet culture. Like, it wasn't harmless for me. Like, I just remember like knowing exactly what I was doing. Like, there was a turning point. I think I went to like the campus health doctor because I was kind of like scaring myself.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a good resource for anyone that's college age and listening. I think that a lot of people don't know that those resources are there.
Yeah. And I had an episode where this is like super embarrassing. Maybe this will be maybe a moment where I text you and I'm like, but maybe not.
Fair. Totally fair.
I ended up in the hospital at school And that was a turning point because I was so severely constipated because I wasn't like giving my body any food.
Yeah.
And I had not like gone to the bathroom in weeks. And I was like at my sorority house and I was just like reeling in pain, like so much pain. And I was, you know, one of the older sorority sisters was like, "You look green. Like I'm taking you to the hospital."
Oh.
And at that point I was like very, very underweight. And that was definitely a turning point where I called my dad and like kind of the best way I could explain it to him was like, and my dad is like, you know, I think a lot of people's dads like don't really understand mental health as much as our generation, you know? And he was just like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I can't eat. Like, I can't eat. And he was like, why? Like, what is going on? And when I went home, I was in the hospital. And then shortly after, it was like Thanksgiving break. And when I went home, my whole family, like, I remember the look on their faces because I was just like emaciated. And they didn't let me go back to Arizona the next semester.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of when I was first diagnosed with anorexia. I'm sorry, I kind of went on a tangent and didn't even explain how that relates to drinking.
No, don't ever apologize. I think that any kind of conversation like this is beneficial to people listening. It's like, you know the statistics, Meg. They're so intertwined.
Yeah. So I did like, I guess you'd consider it like outpatient treatment and gained some weight. And then, you know, everybody thinks, you know, I convinced everybody I was fine and then went back and to school. And it only continued throughout my 20s, like after graduation, throughout my 20s. But it became purging. And that was like mixed with alcohol. Like I would get like drunk, eat a ton, like gorge, and then purge. And all of the behaviors that I kind of talk about on my page in terms of like starving if you're going to go out because you're like, all my calories today are going to come from alcohol, so I'm not going to eat anything. And then you like drink on an empty stomach and then you purge and then you keep drinking and like, and then you wake up and you're like, oh, I need a detox. And then you starve yourself for like 2 days and then you do it all over again. And it was just so, so, so intertwined. But until I quit drinking, I think there were a few years in my 20s where after I met my now husband in 2016, I actually stopped purging altogether, which I thought I was never going to stop doing that. Like that was another thing where I can see a lot of parallels with drinking because, you know, when you're in that space and you're like, am I ever going to stop doing this to myself? Like that was what it was with the purging for me. But when I met him, I just stopped. And I think I thought that I was like recovered from my eating disorder. Like I would say like, oh, I'm, you know, fine. Like I'm recovered from anorexia, bulimia, all of it. And then when I quit drinking or what my first 2 weeks, I have a note still from the first time I went 2 weeks without drinking. It's in my phone and it says, I should share it, but it's like, it's me reflecting on like, I was already putting pressure on myself to lose weight with not drinking.
Oh.
And it was like, why? I was like, I thought that I would be like physically feeling like thinner by now. Like it's been 2 weeks of no drinking. I thought I would. And it's me basically realizing maybe this isn't gone. Like maybe. And I was like obsessively writing everything down that I ate. I mean, to be totally transparent, like I still struggle with my disordered eating. And last week was diagnosed with a different eating disorder by my doctor, which was kind of a whole other thing. But because I don't think that primary care doctors really like take the time to evaluate you. And they just sort of like gave me this diagnosis. But anyway,
it's so hard. You have to advocate for yourself so much and like get second opinions. And that's a whole.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But,
Were you, can I ask, was it orthorexia?
I definitely struggled with orthorexia, but this time my doctor is diagnosing me with ARFID. It's avoidant restrictive food intake disorder is what it stands for. And I've heard of it.
Wow.
I've been like I volunteered with NEDA, the National Eating Disorders Association when I was in college. And so I learned a lot about all the different ways that you can struggle. It's so weird. Like I would say like at any point in my 20s, I was like, you could have pinned it as a different disorder.
Yeah.
There was definitely a time where it was orthorexia because all I did was like exercise and obsessively eat healthy, but I wasn't purging. Right. And I wasn't restricting. Right. I was still getting the same amount, like getting a healthy amount of calories, but obsessed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, and Kaylee and I talk about this too, like binge disorder, right? Like there's it can apply to so many different things. And just like having on the opposite side of that, like having ultimate control over everything that goes in and goes out. It's just like, yeah, it's so consuming. And I was going to mention, I feel that like, just like with people who quit drinking, like you said, you were like, oh, I thought I was recovered, right? It's like, unless we're having a conversation about like recovering, we're not actually recovered just because we remove like the action. So I have people in my life who are sober, but like they're not showing up to this from the perspective of like recovering from what they experienced.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really good conversation to have too. So
yeah. And what Max said in our last episode was it's like an onion. It's like you're like, okay, I'm removing alcohol, or like I'm removing, you know, a version of self-harm or whatever it is. Those are just some for me. But then it's like, oh shit, well now I like there's this other thing and this other thing. And like I feel like it's a lifelong process to kind of undo all of the social conditioning and the negative thought patterns. Yeah. And like, it is, you know, awesome that without alcohol, at least I feel like I'm able to start getting into that work.
Yes.
But fuck, man, it's a journey.
Oh my God. I always kind of like make fun of the word journey, but there's no better term to describe
it. Me too.
It.
Like, we always do.
There isn't. We haven't been able to find a better
my
word.
Husband, my husband's like, if you fucking call one more thing a journey, Katie, I am done with you.
It like, really
it's all
is.
About the journey.
It is.
It is.
So now I kind of like make fun of myself for saying it, but we have to. Like, there's no other word.
Yeah. We do too.
I have a question, not to get in a totally different direction, but you mentioned that a lot of your friends were like, you still have a lot of friends from high school and college. So I'm curious, like how that went for you when you started, like what were some of the things you first started doing in order to try and support your journey, like away from alcohol? And like, how was that with your existing friend group and just kind of life as you knew it, what things had to change, what things still felt good for you to keep around, and how did you kind of adapt to this new lifestyle that you were trying to create?
Yeah, I think, again, like being in the midst of the pandemic and being in lockdown was really helpful just because I didn't have to go out and didn't have to see anybody really. Like I was kind of able to hunker down. I know there's so many people who like got sober, started their sober curious journey in the pandemic because of that. Like it was just, you know, either we were confronted with our drinking so like so boldly, or just like realized we were drinking too much during the pandemic because everybody was like going balls to the wall drinking like it was a music festival in the streets. It was insane.
It was so fucked up. In the state, I have to interrupt to say this. In the state of Oregon, legislation literally passed to go cocktails during COVID.
I'm pretty sure New York City
did it specifically for COVID. Of all of the legislation, of all of the things that were changing, like on an official lawmaking level, that is what we prioritized.
I
fucking to go margaritas.
Yeah, I'm telling you, like it was the same in New York. Like party in the streets. Like whatever happened to open container laws, like they did not exist. Also, it was around the same time as the Black Lives Matter protesting going on.
Yes.
And being, I'm sure it was the same, you know, this was everywhere, but the police didn't really enforce anything. Like
there was nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Like it was totally insane. So I think, so it sort of helped in a way. And that summer, like the first COVID summer was, I think I found 1,000 Hours Dry in the spring, like right when COVID happened. I was actually taking online classes to become, this is hilarious thinking back, to try and become a health coach because I was like not healthy at all.
Well, that's where it starts though, which is so cool.
Yeah. And so I like started this course. I got it for my birthday. I like got the course for my own birthday. I was like, this will be my birthday gift. And that is when I opened an account, like a separate Instagram account to not for a sobriety, not to like document my sobriety journey, but to start like a health coach, like Instagram. And I think that's how I just sort of started finding sober people. Somehow I landed, thank God, like, or whatever, thank the universe. Like I landed on in sober Instagram. And that summer was the first summer that I was able to go. I don't think I made the full 42 days, but at some point at the end of the summer, I think I got like somewhere between 2 and 3 months and felt amazing. Like I felt mentally, not even physically, like mentally, like it was a fog had completely like disappeared. Like I felt like myself again. I just felt so good. And then that fall of 2020, we got engaged and I started drinking again the night we got engaged, because, you know, they throw champagne in your face because that's how you celebrate. And and then, you know, drank through the holidays. But I was very vocal about quitting drinking, or I guess like I didn't say that I was quitting drinking at the time, but my whole family kind of knew that I was evaluating my drinking. So then February of 2021, I joined Tempest.
Oh, interesting. I've never talked to someone that joined Tempest. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was great. Like I still have all of my, I did their like 4-week intensive they had at the time. Oh, I think cool. Their offerings have changed since they've been acquired or merged with.
By Monument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. They might still have that program. And I did that and you get like so much content. Like you get like almost like a textbook of information. Wow. And Holly was still like involved at that point, I believe.
Yeah, she was in 2021. Okay. That's when I started that too. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I did that. And I guess I'm just realizing that like your question was sort of about my friends. But to be honest, I didn't really go out much. I didn't really like see my friends very much for a while. Like, and that's okay. I also like tell people like, that's totally fine. Like you can become a hermit for a year. Like if you want.
Yes. Yeah. I'm still kind of a hermit. Same. And I'm like a really social person, but I'm like, I'm just going to hang out at home, fam.
Yeah. But my friends have always been very supportive, to be honest. Like they still drink. Like none of my friends outside of who I've met through sober Instagram and all of the like different communities and programs that I've like tried out. I don't have any sober friends. But like, I am very grateful because my friends are super supportive. Like one of my friends, I remember the first time I hit like 5 months, sent me like this huge bouquet of flowers. And I was just like shocked that she even knew the day. Like, so I kind of like try to tell people like, don't count your friends out just because your friends still drink. Like, you know, I hear a lot of like, you know, you might outgrow your friends, and you might. Like there are many people that I not outgrew, but just, you know, went different ways.
Different interests at that point too. And like different common ground. And I actually was going to say, I think that my friendships got stronger and yeah, maybe one or two went to the wayside, but that was probably going to happen anyways.
Yeah. And I hope that I've been able to sort of make some type of impact. Like maybe they're thinking a bit more about their own habits. Like who knows?
Yeah.
You can only kind of hope, but like, yeah, I've gotten nothing but like support and love from my friends, to be honest. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Ugh, I love that.
Thanks.
Okay. Something I wanted to ask, because Meg hit the sober space before I did. And she was one of the first profiles that I actually followed when I quit drinking. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So I stopped drinking what? January 2021, Kaylee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I started working with 1000 Hours Dry and sharing about my like sober curious transition in April of 2021. So I was alcohol free for 4 months before I said shit. But when I did, I was like, this is so exciting. I was getting all that dopamine, all of the good endorphins, all of the positive feedback. You know, it was honestly a game changer for me.
Pink cloud.
And so I wanted to know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think just also sharing publicly and being witnessed in that really helped me. Yeah. Personally. And so I was wondering what your experience online as like a newly like sober curious person was. Were you living your life out loud online before you quit drinking, or what was your relationship with social media like? And like, how has that like transitioned over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think like a true millennial always loved social media, you know, like, and yeah, again, queen. Like yes. Thinking back on my childhood now that I'm in therapy, like I was always like an early adopter of like everything, like all of the platforms.
I love it. Mm-hmm.
So I always had an Instagram, you know, since Instagram was like I always had one. But like I said, I made that account in 2020 to be a health coach. What's crazy is like, even though it wasn't going to be a sobriety account, the name, and I'm interested in like which page you followed, if it was like my first one, because I deleted a page.
What was the name?
So many names. Like, You Don't Have to Drink is the only one that's ever stuck. I had, the first one was called The Intervention. It was Intervention.
Oh, I love that. But no,
but
I didn't
follow
that.
Isn't that weird
that
I named it that, even though I wasn't
yes,
even thinking.
Yes, but I love that.
So it was that.
That's so good.
And then I changed it to, there was this like funny thing where every day I would tell everybody to hydrate. So I changed the account for like 2 seconds. I changed it to Club Hydrate.
Oh, I love that too.
I feel like these I might have been around for that.
Really?
Yeah.
And yes, then it yes. was Meg Isn't Drinking is what I came back as.
That's the one. That's what I knew.
Yeah.
First. So when I, and then it was, go ahead.
So when I got engaged and I drank, I was mortified and so ashamed because I was like really ingrained in 1,000 Hours Dry that summer of 2020 and then slipped and drank through the holidays, or that would probably be called like a lapse, drank through the holidays. And then when I came back, it was Meg Isn't Drinking. And that was actually February, 2021. So we were kind of, you surfaced the same time I like resurfaced. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, that's so interesting. Yeah, because I just always had my handle was always just my name. And I remember being a reframe ambassador and being like, I'm going to just start a separate page. And Kayla was like, don't do it.
Yeah.
Just use the page. And I'm like, no, I can't do it. But I did. And I'm so glad that I have, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, we Dry Hard Pod came to fruition the summer of 2021. And that's when I started working with Reframe app and 1,000 Hours Dry. Like it was really cool. And I feel like I like went head first into it and then I burnt the fuck out. And I was like, I never want to be on the internet ever again.
Yeah.
And so I've noticed lately you have been on just like a fucking roll on Instagram. Like, I feel like you've probably gained a lot of followers recently. You're like really in your power. I feel like you're saying things and you're not afraid of it. And I just fucking love it. And I wanted to share that with you because
thank you.
I like following. Yeah. I like following accounts that are authentic to what's true for them. And I just feel that message from you. And I want more of that in my life. It's something I'm inviting in. And I just have a hard time showing up that way. So
it's so funny though, because thank you so much. But what's crazy is I still have not shared. I am only just starting to share my account with people in like my family and my friends and stuff like that. So I like your original like question was like the, you know, like how did that like all evolve? And so when I came back to Instagram, to sober Instagram in February 2021, and I went all in, you know, I did Tempest, I was back with 1,000 Hours Dry. I went back to the Babes page, 1,000 Hours Dry Babes. I kind of like went all in like you, but I was still not like, I was very much still, what I did was I blocked. Not even kidding you. I had like 200 people blocked manually.
Oh my gosh.
From my page up until like 6-7 months ago, I finally unblocked everybody. And I was like, I don't care anymore. Like, I know that this is like a forever thing for me now. I know that I want to maybe like create a career that ties into what my passions are, and like sobriety is very much a part of that. And so I think like what you're saying, where like you've noticed kind of this like shift, I thank you so much for acknowledging that, because I do think that's been like an internal thing for me where I don't give a fuck about the numbers anymore. Like, numbers have ruled my life, like from like my weight to everything. It's just like your salary, like your size, it's just like numbers just like rule everything. And
Right.
I also stopped letting like my day count rule my recovery. And I think that's why, again, that's like huge. I talk about slipping a lot, because it's like day count is not everything, but the numbers aren't everything. And so I think I've sort of just stopped. I've sort of like started giving less fucks. And I shared my page with like, you know, one of my best friends has always known about it. But then I shared with my mom. I recently shared with my sister-in-law, and it was like a beautiful moment. Like, she was so supportive. And I'm realizing that it's not that scary. Like, I'm kind of realizing that I don't care. Like, I just don't care. Like, who sees it anymore? So it's just funny that you say that, because I'm still kind of hiding a little bit. I'm not fully ready to like share it.
I see you. So yeah, of course. Yeah. It's something that like on Dry Hard Pod, I can literally post whatever and I don't care, even though I don't post anything because I'm still working on that. But on my personal page, it's definitely been an ebb and flow. But what I was going to tell you is that the numbers are interesting, because I used to feel the same way. I had posted one reel, and I've talked about this on the pod a little bit, that got like blew up like 500,000 views. I gained 7,000 followers from it. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And it was just like the most fun reel I've ever made. And I've been losing hundreds of followers since then, which has been so good for me. Actually, after the reel took off and I gained that many followers, Instagram flagged my account as fake.
What?
And I was banned for 30 days. Yeah. And I got my Instagram back. And then ever since then, I just like my relationship with social media changed kind of, you know, after not having it for 30 days.
Yep.
But yeah, like every time I share a picture of my dog now, I lose like hundreds of followers. And it's just like they were there for sober content.
Yeah.
And my page isn't just sober content. It's my life, you know, and being sober curious is part of that. But the whole point of this is that like, even though I lose followers, I'm the ones that are in alignment and that are here for the whole thing, because we're more than just like creating a fucking sober meme.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're so much more than that. And it's community is in the like direct messages anyways. So it's just like an interesting observation that like everything is tracked. And I work in social media. I'm a social media manager for a few businesses, and it can be tricky.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I touch social on certain projects. And you know, when I started and my career at the agency, I was working on social specifically, and I've always loved it. Like again, like true millennials, here we are. Like, we just love social media. Yeah. But
yeah.
I love that you said that, because I recently started working with a business. She's like a business/spiritual coach. And she told me the same thing. She was like, because I lose followers all the time too. Like, don't even like to look at the analytics, because I'm like, I don't fucking care.
Exactly.
But it's like the people who like I don't want you here anyway, if you don't want to see what I have to share. Like, I just want people who want to get help out of it and who need to see this. Like, I'm mostly speaking to myself. And then if it resonates with you, great. Like, that's usually how I like try to think about it. You know, we can't, you know, we're human, but I try to not care about the numbers as much anymore. And I think that's what makes it easier for me to be consistent and post. Cause I'm really just posting like whatever the hell I'm like passionate about that day when I wake up. Like, I'm not somebody who can like plan out like a content calendar for the week. Like, I just can't bring myself to do it for some reason.
Cool. So what are you doing for work right now? How is like your work life evolved as your relationship with alcohol has?
Well, thank God for work from home, because I like no part of me wants to be back in like the client dinner world where I'm like have to go out to like dinners and stuff every week. You know, Kaylee, I'm sure you get that.
Yeah, she's like, fuck no.
I did that like 2 weeks ago, and I'm literally still recovering. It's taking me like 14 days to get back in my own life.
Ugh, I feel that. I'm grateful for work from home, because I don't have to like interact much and go out to dinners and drinks and stuff. But I am open with my team about it. Like, when I joined my new team in July of 2021, I started on the brand team, and I almost immediately told my boss, like, I almost like word vomited it out. And I was like, I don't drink, like, immediately. And it was a game changer. So anybody listening, like, I know that can be really scary, and you don't have to tell them your entire life story or literally anything at all other than I don't drink.
Yeah.
And since then, like, my boss has reached out to me and been like, oh, like, next time we do, you know, like, they're based in Austin, the company. So I, you know, they were conscious of my sobriety, and when they were planning like a team dinner, and like, he was like, what can we call a happy hour instead of happy hour? And he's like, could we call it social hour? Like, they're so great.
Yeah.
And so very lucky, but like, don't be afraid to say that, because drinking is so ingrained in like business culture too. And that needs to stop. Like, we shouldn't be expected to go out and get hammered in order to like bond with our coworkers and like get a promotion. Like, that should not be related.
And it's really interesting too, because I work in like blue collar work. I'm not in the corporate world. Okay. And we're like, we explicitly say in our handbook that hangovers are not allowed.
Love that.
Like, we're anti-alcohol culture in like, you know, because it's like we deal with like freight and driving. And so like, you can't have a DUI.
Yeah.
You literally fucking cannot. You can't work for us. And so I would love to see that happen in the corporate world. Like, you are much better in a 9 a.m. meeting if you weren't up until midnight oversharing with your boss.
Oh my God.
You know, yeah. Hitting on your coworkers, blacking out, all to get a raise that like doesn't matter if you are not like happy and like living a sustainable lifestyle in your work culture anyways. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Amen. Yeah. That's, you're right. It's, there are so many careers where you literally cannot drink.
No.
I wish that was the case for the corporate world, but
I know.
Sadly, the opposite.
Yeah.
Especially people who work in sales. I have a lot of friends who work at big companies in sales, and they will go to these like conferences, and the entire point is just to get drunk together and like bond.
It's wild. We co-parent, and one of our co-parents has been alcohol-free for like 6 months, and he works in sales. He works for an engineering software company, and it's like really high pressure. And, you know, he has a full territory of like multiple states where he goes down and he has to like booze.
Yes.
Literally, they call it booze and schmooze. And they're like, they've gone to strip clubs and like, it's wild. And the hundreds of thousands of dollars that this company saved when COVID happened from not flying people all over the US and spending ridiculous amounts of money. I mean, and they just aren't going back to how it used to be, which is amazing.
That's fantastic.
You know, they're like, yeah, changing it from the inside out. Like, COVID, as scary and awful as it was, I think that it really showed a lot of us how unsustainable the way we were living was. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're at a really cool turning point in alcohol culture right now. I mean, we see this all the time. We, all of us know this,
yeah.
But like, it might not be as mainstream as it feels to us yet because we're so engulfed in it. But like, I'm very optimistic that things are going to be changing. Like, at least by the time our kids are in the workforce. Hopefully it's a totally different story. It's exciting. I feel like it's an exciting time now, thankfully.
Yes. For real. Okay, so Meg, we could talk for hours. So I am going to kind of like give a little wrap up and ask you a couple of questions.
I do feel like I could talk to you guys for hours. So please,
I know.
Let's
I
do
feel
this
like
again.
We should just hang out.
Yes.
I know, exactly. Yay. Okay, cool. Okay, Meg, so what we always like to ask, first of all, thank you for being such an awesome and open guest. This is so exciting.
Thank
and I want to hear
guys.
All about like getting engaged and wedding planning and honeymooning and like the bachelorette slip. I want to hear all about that. So we are formally inviting you back on the podcast.
Please.
So we can do an episode just based around that. Cause I think that so many of us are going through that or have, and it would be so valuable.
I would love to. I haven't told too many people. I've only posted this on close friends so far, but I'm starting a podcast. I'm terrified, but really excited. And I would love to have you guys on.
Yes. Yay. Okay. So, Meg, what advice would you have for someone who's going through a similar experience as you or is wanting to achieve their dreams and is like on this sober curious path? Like, what's one thing that you would give them?
I would say the first thing to come to mind is that you don't have to have it all figured out right now. I think a lot of people kind of feel that pressure to be like, is this a forever thing? What happens in, you know, what happens when I get married? Like you kind of said with like the marriage and everything like that. What happens when I get married, or what happens when I turn 30 or when I turn 50? Or, you know, you kind of can go down this rabbit hole of feeling like you need to just have it all figured out in many different ways. Like, I mean, this is like a whole other conversation we could have too, but like for a while I was still like smoking weed and using cannabis to help me with my sobriety. And there's a lot of like shame in certain spaces and judgment in certain spaces about that too. And I felt like I needed to immediately change everything in my whole entire life. Like I needed to do a complete overhaul of everything, and you don't. Like, you know, they say one day at a time for a reason. You don't have to like change your whole entire life. You don't even have to commit to a whole month. Like just try it, go easy on yourself. And yeah, everybody slips. Everybody slips at some point. So there is no need to feel any shame around that either. I think those are the big things that I would say.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you. One last thing. Well, there's two more. So not one last. Is there anything that you didn't feel like you got to speak on or that you want to reemphasize to our audience on what we covered today?
I think I'll take another opportunity to mention the disordered eating. I think whether or not you have a diagnosis or you resonate with everything I said about disordered eating. I know some of it was pretty, extreme, or could feel pretty extreme, especially like when I mentioned purging, people are like, ugh. Like if they're not familiar, that can be kind of like taboo, but, it's very, very, very common to struggle with both. And I think everyone, men and women, however you identify, you can relate to just not feeling good in your body or struggling with your body in some way. I think a lot of people can relate to that, most people probably. So if those things are coming up for you when you're quitting drinking, pay attention to it, because maybe you do have some underlying stuff with food and body that you didn't know of, or maybe it's just starting, because a lot of people also get pretty obsessive about their health in sobriety. Yeah. So I would just say, pay attention to that. Know that you're not alone. Know that not everybody's bodies are the same. And like, there's a lot of weight talk and food talk and health talk in the sober space. So.
And skin talk.
And everything. And like, yeah.
Like lots of physical appearance stuff. And honestly, I pretty much fucking look the same as I did when I quit drinking, same. Except for I'm 120% more myself now.
Same. Yeah.
My skin got worse. My skin got way worse.
Same.
I was like, you hear you're going to lose all this weight and that your skin's going to be so clear and there's going to be all of these like physical benefits and you're not
you're gonna
seeing
glow
them,
up,
but you're
like,
yeah. And you're going through it and you're just like, God, not only do I feel like sometimes I can't be like everyone else and be like the quote unquote perfect drinker, but now in sobriety, I'm not having this glow up that was promised to me. So like the fuck, I'm just getting all of the shit.
Exactly. And so
it is so worth it.
So worth it. And it's, again, it's like, I just posted something about that. Like that's not the point. Maybe it is the point for some people, but like there's so much.
And maybe
more.
It can be your starting point, right? Yeah. Like that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So just pay attention to that stuff too and protect yourself. Like, you don't have to follow those accounts. Not every sobriety account does that. So focuses on appearance.
That.
So yeah.
Yeah. And just like with sober curiosity, like just like with anything else, like the flavor is not for everyone. So like you get to pick and choose the pockets that you want to hang out in. And there are some that I'm no longer like following and that feels good for me. And there are some that I've found that I like, you know, I really like took a deep dive into like new age, like spirituality. And then I was like, oh,
yeah.
okay, I'm gonna like backpedal a little, and I love some of it, but like we don't have to be just one thing. We can be like a little bit of a lot. Yeah, that feels good for me too.
Yes. So just not drinking is enough. You don't have to like go and lose the weight and like do all these other things. Like just focus on that for now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Meg. You're awesome. Where can people find you?
You guys are amazing. Thank you so much. You can find me at You Don't Have to Drink. And now you can also find me at More Than Sobriety will be my podcast account. There's nothing there right now, but follow. There will be things there in the future.
Yay! Yay! Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, I can't wait to hype that up.
Thank you.
I'm excited to be friends forever now because that's what we make everyone be when they come on our podcast.
Awesome.
Thank you.